hands came up to scrub her locks with frustrated rapidity. The motion caused her shirt to raise, the down of hair between her legs suddenly revealed in moonlight.
"You fucking know it!" she said again.
Jackal felt his blood go hot.
"So which was it, Fetch? Who led me astray, Crafty or the girl?"
"Both!"
She was in his face now, her breath edged with wine.
"We got Tyne sniffing around the kiln because of you. We got a wizard in our ranks who makes puppets of dead orcs because of you. I thought you wanted to lead this hoof, Jackal, not bury it."
"Because of me?"
Jackal repeated through clenched teeth.
"Because of me, you are a member of this hoof, Fetching. Because of me, you are not warming one of our beds. You are a sworn rider of the Grey Bastards, sitting on a hog, respected and feared. Because of me."
He could feel Fetching trembling with barely suppressed rage, the tiny twin fires of moonlight that were her eyes glimmering.
"And because of me," she countered, "you're not."
Snarling, Jackal seized Fetching by the throat. She jerked away, but he held fast, and they stumbled across the small room. Fetching landed a blow across Jackal's face, and pain bloomed in his teeth. He tangled her neck strike with his free arm and kicked her feet out from under her. She grabbed a fistful of his hair as she fell, dragging him down with her. He would have gone anyway, not wanting to release his grip upon her neck. His clenching fingers burrowed deeper into the iron resistance of Fetching's muscles and felt the pulse of her quickening heartbeat. Jackal fixated on it, yearning to feel it slow beneath his touch, then cease completely. They crashed to the floor. Weathering blows from her fists, Jackal put both hands to the task of throttling her. The blows ceased, and Fetching wrapped her legs around Jackal's waist, throwing him off with a powerful torsion. They rolled, and she was now atop him, sending a punch down into his cheekbone. Through the dull flash of pain, Jackal felt her scramble off. He snatched for her while she was still on her hands and knees, catching her hair in his fingers. Wrapping his other arm about her waist, he hauled back and pulled her back down. They both faced the ceiling now, and Jackal removed his hand from her hair to seize her neck in the crook of his arm. Her head squirmed against his collarbone, but soon ceased as he increased the pressure. A sound began to push through Fetching's short, choked breaths, a deeper, constricted flutter. She was laughing. Jackal felt her hips revolving, grinding her buttocks down into him, drawing his attention to the object of her sudden mirth. Beneath his breeches, beneath the pressure of Fetching's body, Jackal was hard. He must have relaxed his hold, for Fetching's laughter now escaped in a raw rush. Jackal removed his arm from her throat and clapped his hand over her mouth, wanting to end the sound. Amused blasts of breath besieged his hand, and he became aware of his other hand upon the spasmodically flexing muscles of her stomach, the flesh smooth and near feverish. Fetching cocked one hip, rising slightly away from his crotch. Jackal tried to seize that escaping hip in a bid to pull it back down, but she knocked his hand away with her own before sliding it within the agonizing gap she had created between them, fumbling to loosen the ties of his breeches and failing. Frustrated, she tore his hand away from her mouth and sat up. Straddling his stomach, she quickly set to unlacing him. But Jackal upset her attempts when the shadowed dimples above her ass forced him to scoot down and pull her down upon his face. He heard her breath catch as his tongue touched her. She tasted of sweet salt and saddle leather. Fetch must have given up on his breeches, for Jackal could feel his cock hardening further, half free, the laces painfully tight against his flesh. He did not care, lost in the act of devouring her. A voice called through the door, one Jackal could barely hear. Someone must have heard the scuffle and was now asking after Fetch.
"Fuck off,"
she replied, an airy giggle escaping through her feigned anger. Jackal reveled as her weight settled until he could barely breathe. Fetching allowed him to explore with abandon, then took control of her pleasure and rubbed against his tongue until her thighs quivered. The warm, intoxicating weight left him. The bed was close, and Fetching rose just long enough to fall back upon the blankets. Jackal got quickly to his feet, turning as he tore at his laces. Fetch was reclined on the bed, propped up on her elbows, one knee in the air. Jackal's breeches were around his thighs when she hooked her calf around his lower back and drug him toward her open legs. She reached and grabbed his fruits, tugging them down until his cod leveled, straining away from his body and toward hers. Falling forward, Jackal caught his weight on extended arms, his forehead pressing into Fetch's as she drug him inside. A groan escaped from low in his throat, and Fetching hissed, her clenched teeth quickly separating into an open-mouthed expression of feral delight. Their eyes met, and mated more than their bodies, the small span between suffused with a lifetime of shattered restraint. As Jackal thrust, Fetching met his gaze boldly, challenging him as she had always done, tempting him, even now. He surged in that roiling, unconquerable gaze, trapped in the naked, unblinking pleasure reflected there. They seemed to sustain on a single, vicious breath, passing it between their open lips, a finger's breadth apart. Entwining her fingers behind his neck, Fetching rolled Jackal onto his back. He slipped out of her and gnashed his teeth in aggravation, but Fetch quickly took him in hand, holding him upright as she lowered herself down. He bucked up into her, but she grasped his jaw firmly, shaking her head, until he lay still. Balancing on the balls of her feet, Fetching eased herself up and back down. Her hands were on his chest, but she soon moved them to her own knees, bracing herself as she rode him with greater fervor. Fetching bounced on him with increasing vigor, never allowing him to escape, her body in perfect control. Soon, Jackal was gritting his teeth, his eyes squinting shut against his will at the blissful pleasure in his loins. No other part of her touched him but that furiously sliding heat. His ears roaring with blood, Jackal's entire body tensed as the end came. Fetching stood at the last moment, causing Jackal's jumping cock to thump heavily onto his body, his expulsions landing hotly on his chest, the lesser flows spattering his stomach. He groaned through teeth clenched with release and vexation. After a moment, he sat up, looking irritably down on the mess Fetch had forced him to make of himself. She stood on the floor, near the foot of the bed, grinning as she cocked her head. "Serves you right for all the times you did that to a whore," she said huskily, removing her rumpled shirt and flinging it down on him. "Clean up. You have to get riding." After wiping himself off, Jackal rose, feeling all the pains that wrath and lust had kept at bay. The cuts crisscrossing his body stung, some of them reopened and bleeding anew. The bones in his face ached from Fetch's pummeling, and there was pain in his fruits as well, the dull kind that always settled after sex. Fetching's own injuries were suddenly apparent as well. Even in the low light, Jackal could now see the bruise stains across her ribs, the gash above her eye, the swollen hump of her broken and reset nose. None of that was his work. They were all tokens from Oates. "Just tell me why, Fetching." They both heard the pleading in his voice. He expected her to mock him for it, but shockingly, she took a step toward him, and it looked as if she would reach up to touch his face, the barest intention of movement, so slight Jackal might have imagined it. Instead, she pulled his dagger from the door jamb and offered it to him. "You think I did this to you," she said firmly. "I didn't. I did this to save the hoof. If you think me a liar, then use this slicer and cut my damned heart out." Jackal opened the door. His eyes flicked to the weapon in her outstretched hand. "Keep it. offered the same choice to Oates. If he wakes. Turning his back, he left the room. Chapter 20. There was only one figure waiting at the mouth of the tunnel gate to see Jackal and Starling off. A wide, turbaned silhouette standing at ease in the night.
"And so where we first met becomes where we part,"
Crafty said, his smile evident even in shadow. Jackal pulled Hearth to a halt and sat for a moment in silence. "Whatever it is you came here for, Uhad, you must not have wanted it badly enough."
"Because you are not a successful usurper? Is this your meaning?"
Jackal snorted bitterly. Crafty's command of the Hisparthan tongue waxed and waned to suit his purpose. "You didn't help me get the chief's seat, so now I can't help you." The wizard's pudgy, ring-laden fingers splayed out in a futile gesture.
"Had you come to me with your intentions, friend Jackal, I would have warned against untimely action."
"It doesn't take a wizard to see a shit future that is already yesterday."
"This is so," Crafty placated.
"What will you do now?"
"Truly, though it is far from ideal—"
"Enough," Jackal cut him off wearily. "It doesn't matter. It's not my place to care anymore." He kicked his hog forward into the pure black of the tunnel, leaving Crafty to stand in the starlight. In front of him, Starling went a bit taut as they rode blind. She did not know to trust the hog's instincts within the gullet of the wall. "We're soon through," he told her, and tightened his hold about her waist. Thankfully, she had not balked when he came to collect her from the supply hall. The slopheads tasked with guarding her would not meet his eye and offered him no aid. They went about their duties amongst the inventory, silently transferring care of the she-elf to Jackal as they would a bag of beans. That was what she had become, a commodity, to be stored amongst sacks of grain and barrels of olive oil, adopting their mute dullness. A mote of vitality appeared when she beheld the cuts on Jackal's arms and chest, but there was no trepidation on her face, only a grim curiosity. He took her from amongst the shelves with the rest of his allotted kit. And now the kiln was behind them both. Forever. Hearth wanted to run as soon as he cleared the tunnel. Jackal allowed him, checking the beast's stride just enough for Starling's ease. The whim of the hog was their only guide, for Jackal had no inclination of where they should head. Ulwandulas was open to him, daring him to tread where he will. He was a free rider, a nomad, with no oaths or pledges binding him, no sworn brothers to watch his flank. He and Starling would live or die on the choices he made, and that was if the lots chose to be kind. If the sun rose to find them in bastard lands, then die they would, bristling with thrumbolts if his former brethren could not stomach to get close for the killing. The shortest distance out of the lot was north, toward the Umber Mountains, but that would bring them to the edge of Tynelands. Was that the best course? Simply turn Starling loose at familiar borders and be done? That was supposing he could get close enough without the elves feathering him quicker than the gray bastards. Even if he could, would they let Starling live? Would she allow herself to live once she learned the truth of her condition? There were always the other hoofs. The Skull Sour's lot was the nearest, but the thought of living in the furrow made Jackal's skin crawl. He had often found the kiln too confining, to say nothing of that underground stronghold. The orc stains were just beyond Badayat Hill, but they accepted only thrice-bloods. The fangs of our fathers were too obsessed with thick gods for Jackal's tastes, and there was already bad blood between him and the shards. That only left three choices: the Cauldron Brotherhood, the Tusked Tide, and the Sons of Perdition. But none of them would consider taking him with Starling as baggage. If they did, they would want her as a whore. The only thing rarer than seeing a she-elf is fucking one, the saying went. No. Jackal would have to forego the other hoofs, at least until he knew what to do with his companion. That left only one place. Strava. It was the obvious choice, but Jackal was reluctant to return after agreeing to Zirko's mad bargain. He had not expected to go back until the Betrayer Moon, if then. Still, it made the most likely sanctuary for him and Starling. They had already been there together, received aid. Surely they would be welcome again. Zirko believed Jackal was carrying one of the halfling's precious relics inside his arm. Why would the little priest turn him away after asking he swear allegiance to the god Bellico and some loon-brained crusade against the orcs? Plus, Zirko knew of the half-breed Starling carried, so there would be no need for lies, and it was unthinkable that the halflings or the Unyar would demand the she-elf as a plaything. It would be safe, as safe as anywhere in the lots. Jackal pulled the reins west. It was at least a 4-day journey, but they would be out of the Grey Bastard's lot once they crossed the Alhundra. There was enough time to make it before dawn, but only just. Jackal pushed Harth hard, though the hog needed little urging. A night ride across the Badlands was nothing new for the barbarian, and he took joy in the freedom, the chance to roam, to run, unburdened with the knowledge that home was forever closed. Jackal concentrated on the ride, watched the terrain for hazards and the darkness for foes. He tried to settle into familiar rhythms, but it was difficult with the smell of Starling's hair in his nostrils. His mind kept skulking back to fetching, to the engulfing pain of her betrayal, the feel of her skin, the taste of her. Briefly, he wondered if that was why she had lain with him, to eclipse the treachery. But he knew it was not the reason, had known even as he entered her. It was the last chance, for both of them. All kinship had been shattered by her actions, but so too had all impediments. No longer friends, no longer hoofmates, no longer living under Jackal's impending leadership, they were free to be lovers. Fetching had convinced the hoof that she lusted for women, and Jackal allowed himself to believe it over the years, despite the memories from their youth to the contrary. First kisses, first fondles, all awkward and shivering. But it had stopped when Fetch set her mind to the hoof. Jackal had not minded. He even understood. He wanted her to be one of them, and knew that to do so she would need to become one of them. Besides, there had been plenty of other girls who were willing and generous, and that was all Jackal's youthful baseness required. After a few years and a handful of shared visits to Sancho's brothel, it was easy to support the falseness of Fetch's affections until they became truth. In their worst moment, Fetch had set aside the impostor and taken what she wanted, what she knew they both wanted. The last chance. It was agonizing and infuriating. The pain and anger made all the more tempestuous by the fact that Jackal already wanted her again. He called a quick halt to keep Starling from having to ride with a saddle horn in front and behind. Reining Harth up next to a rocky spur above a draw, Jackal dismounted quickly and turned to help Starling down, but she had already swung a leg over and ignored his reaching hands. Feigning stiffness in his legs, Jackal moved away to walk off the actual discomfort. Starling remained close to Harth, the natural grace of her kind evident even in the small pacing steps she took. Beryl had scrounged clothes for her that fit properly, deerskin breeches, a linen shirt, a riding hood and mantle. Clean, garbed, and unguarded, she appeared less the cornered animal, yet still out of place. She reminded Jackal of a rainfall during a day bright with sun, natural, yet rare and inharmonic. Her captivity in the Sludge Man's hut had been an atrocity, her confinement in the kiln a crude necessity. Jackal could not imagine Strava would be much better. He wondered, was there a place in the world she would belong? Hells, the same could be asked of him. Two people just got down from Hearth's saddle, and both were strangers to Jackal. He ambled up the shallow slope, giving Starling some space, and stood atop the spur. What he saw moving along their back trail sent him rushing immediately back down.
"We must go," he told Starling, mounting up and reaching down for her.
This time she did not ignore him, the urgency in his voice undeniable. He kicked Hearth into a gallop, guiding him along the draw as long as possible, sticking to the lower ground to avoid revealing a silhouette on the horizon to their pursuer. A lone rider, on hogback, not a mile behind.
Damn the Claymaster! He had already sent the boys out, which meant they weren't waiting for dawn. It was all a lie, the chief's mercy nothing but a ruse. The poxy cur never had any intention of letting Jackal and Starling live. There was no time now to try to lose them, cover his trail. Dawn was coming, and life was now a race to the river.
"Reach forward!" Jackal called behind Starling's ear. "Grab his bristles!" He took one of her hands and guided it into Hearth's mane, squeezing down on her knuckles until he felt her fingers clench. She understood, and did the same with her other hand.
"Don't pull back. Just hold steady and let your arms go with him."
Jackal did not know how much of that Starling would comprehend, but was relieved to see her follow his instruction. Hearth was surging now, and Jackal counted half a dozen of the hog's deep exhales before letting go of Starling's waist. Gripping only with his legs, Jackal slung his stockbow around, pulled back on the string, and loaded a bolt. Jamming the butt of the weapon hard against his thigh, and holding it one-handed, Jackal grabbed a fistful of Hearth's rough mane and bent to the task of a hard ride. There wasn't a barbarian in the Gray Bastard's stables that was faster than his, but none of his former brothers would be doubled up. As soon as they discovered he had given flight, they would kick their hogs to match. Once they were within thrum shot, it would be over. Scrub and boulders, silvered with moonlight, rushed past as Hearth chewed up the dirt. Jackal ignored the ground immediately before them, trusting to his mount, and looked ahead, quickly assessing the oncoming terrain and making small adjustments to their course with the weight of his body. The hog responded without hesitation, anticipating the subtle commands. They stuck to the flats, thundering across the sandy swaths lit with leech starlight, bright white against the dark. The open ground would make them an easy mark, but it was the only way to gain a lead. Jackal turned in the saddle and saw none giving chase. Not yet. They would need every heartbeat. Starling was doing well holding her seat, her balance perfect. Hearth ran as if unaware of the extra weight. The Alhundra came into view ahead, the constellations sliding upon the skin of the water. Snatching a look behind, Jackal cursed. He did not know precisely how long the other rider had been in view, but he was certainly there now. They would reach the river ahead of their pursuer, but perhaps not ahead of a bolt in the back. Jackal had a vague idea what stretch of the Alhundra lay before them, but there was only a single ford for miles in both directions. At night, after a desperate flight, the odds of striking the crossing were slim, and then there would be no choice but to turn and fight. Hearth charged toward the flow, his sides heaving as he smelled water. The hog found reserves of speed and made directly for the bank, his hooves striking rocks as he jumped down into the gully bordering the wash. Jackal nearly pulled back on one of the hog's swine yankers to prevent the beast from rushing headlong into the drink, but stayed his hand at the last moment. Water erupted beneath them as Hearth barged confidently across the ford. Jackal smiled and nearly let loose a triumphal cry.
"Hearth, you beautiful, savvy son of a sow," he said, rubbing the pig vigorously.
They quickly reached the other side, and Jackal tugged his mount around. It was time to see who chased them. A moment later, the other rider came into view. The Alhundra was wide, but the pale, bald figure was unmistakable.
"Hoodwink!"
Jackal cursed the name softly, his voice swallowed by the sound of the river, but Hood's gaze settled on him in that moment, as if he had heard. They stared at each other across the ephemeral barrier of the current, and suddenly it felt as if the water flowed down Jackal's spine. He saw Hoodwink's mind, the intention to cross written in the set of his shoulders. Baring his teeth in a silent snarl, Jackal whirled his mount and made for the scrabble of boulders he had spied while crossing the ford. The other bastards weren't in pursuit, he was sure of that now. The Claymaster had sent his pet murderer to ensure Jackal and Starling were found on Hoof Land come the morning, no matter where their feet stood when they died. Had it been anyone else, Jackal would have kept riding, knowing the tradition of safety would be upheld. But this was Hoodwink. Riding swiftly up the rise, Jackal jumped from the saddle as soon as the rocks blocked him from view. Keeping low, thrum in hand, he left Starling astride Hearth and scrambled up the boulders. Nearing the uneven crest, he dropped and crawled on his belly until he gained vantage over the river. Just in time. Hood was already more than halfway across. Jackal would rather have come to grips with the dead-eyed spook, vented his rage in the clash of blades, but he couldn't take the risk. He needed the Claymaster to know that coming after him was a mistake, to let the Hoof know that any who hunted him would not return to the kiln alive. Pulling the stock of his thrum tight into his shoulder, Jackal sighted down the shaft, leading Hoodwink with the barbed head of the bolt. The skulking wretch wasn't pushing his hog hard, his pace almost leisurely, mocking those who fled from him. Well, Jackal wasn't fleeing. He took a deep breath and held it in his lungs. Let Hood's cold confidence accompany him to every hell.
"Get your finger off that tickler, boy."
The voice was deep, gravel loosed by thunder, and uniquely resonant. You could never forget that voice. Jackal cocked his head to the right to find an arrow trained on him, steady behind the straining string of a recurve bow. The archer stood amongst the boulders, his position perfectly chosen. Jackal would never be able to swing his thrum around and loose a bolt before receiving a shaft through the ribs. Complying with the command, he splayed his fingers away from the tickler and watched as a phantom from his past detached from the shadows. Warbler. The older half-orc had changed little in all the years. His thick, wavy mane of hair was now entirely silver, but it didn't appear one strand had been lost. The distantly familiar face was more wrinkled than Jackal remembered, housing the same flinty stare and prominent fangs that had often glowered at him as a child. Some softness had settled into his midsection, but his shoulders were still broad, and age had not bent his spine. Hells, he was still taller than Jackal. That was disappointing, yet not surprising. Warbler was a thrice-blood, after all.
"It's me, Warbor," Jackal said. "Look hard. It's Jacko."
"I ain't blind," came the low reply. "I know who you are, Jackal of the Gray Bastards. Though, judging from those cuts, perhaps not any more."
Jackal was surprised to hear the use of his hoof name, a name he had not possessed when Warbler left the kiln.
"You're making a mistake," Jackal told him. The broadhead did not waver. "No, boy, I'm preventing one. Now, empty that runnel."
Gritting his teeth, Jackal reached with his left hand and pulled the bolt from his weapon.
"Thrum it," Warbler ordered.
Jackal hesitated. The string on the recurve bow groaned as Warbler pulled it tauter. With no choice, Jackal pulled the tickler on his unloaded stock bow, sending the string snapping forward on useless air.
"Leave it and stand up."
Abandoning his thrum, Jackal stood slowly. "I got a killer on my heels. He's going to be up these rocks soon. I know it's been a long span of years, Warbler, but you need to trust me."
"Killer?" Warbler seemed amused at the word, grinning for a long moment before unleashing a sharp, controlled whistle.
Hoodwink is a damn sight more than a killer.
Jackal heard footsteps on the lower rocks, and Hood appeared, holding his tulwar loosely in one hand, Starling firm in the other.
A damn sight more, Warbler said again, as the pale devil climbed to stand beside him. And right now, I trust him for all the hells more than I do you.
Chapter 21. Bound hand and foot, Jackal could only glare as Hoodwink and Warbler spoke in hushed tones. The familiarity in their furtive discourse was nearly impossible to reconcile. Warbler was clearly asking questions, and the answers were given readily, but with grim brevity. Though their words were lost to distance and whispers, this was the most Jackal had ever seen Hood speak. There were more than a few gestures and glances at Starling, who sat unbound, less than a stone's throw from where Jackal knelt. He wondered if she had even tried to run, though Hearth would not have responded favorably to commands from a strange rider. The hog was now tethered to a gorse bush beyond where Hood and Warbler stood, next to their own mounts, perfectly at ease. Likely Hoodwink had come up slowly, a familiar smell on a fellow pig, the cunning fuck. No doubt he simply reached out and took Hearth's swine yanker without so much as a squeal of complaint. No, Starling had not tried to run. She was not as big a fool as Jackal. He looked over and met her eyes. "They won't harm you," he said, trying to sound resolved. She looked away almost immediately. Indeed not a fool, to ignore assurances from a captor now trussed up with leather straps.
"No, we won't harm you," Warbler announced gruffly as he strode toward them.
He went to Starling and squatted, waited calmly until she met his gaze. Then he spoke to her in the elf tongue. It did not sound beautiful, even with Warbler's distinctive voice, yet the old mongrel wielded the language with confidence. It seemed to Jackal that Starling gave a wordless affirmation. Warbler remained balanced on his haunches, deep in thought. He nodded shallowly to himself and drew a knife from his boot. Jackal jumped up and managed to land on his yoked feet, but an unseen hand clamped around his neck and pushed him back to his knees.
"One day, Hood," Jackal snarled, "you'll fail to be so damn quiet."
With a deft motion, Warbler flipped the knife, caught it by the blade, and slowly offered it, grip first, to Starling. She took it readily, eagerly, her hand darting out with all the speed of a scorpion sting. Standing, she gazed at the blade for a moment, then her eyes flicked to Warbler. He remained where he was, giving nothing but a small permissive gesture with his hand. Jackal slumped beneath Hoodwink's hand. Warbler had just given Starling the choice he couldn't, and her decision was written in the haunted set of her face. As she turned, her eyes settled on Jackal, brief as the landing of a butterfly, and then she was gone, hurrying into the night with the instrument of her salvation clutched in her hand. Clenching his teeth in futile rage, Jackal hung his head. His hoof, his friends, his life, all now lost for the protection of a she-elf who wanted nothing but to die. Warbler approached and resumed his squat.
"You challenged the Claymaster."
It wasn't a question. Jackal looked up.
"Same as you."
Warbler rubbed unconsciously at the web of raised scars on his arms. There had been more brothers during his day, more axes at the table.
"When I did it, the chief didn't have a wizard tickling his ear."
Warbler snorted and shook his head.
"You always had balls, Jacko. Waddled funnier than most Tal'dan whelps because of 'em.
I'd hope some of that wrinkled flesh would find its way up inside your skull. My learning was cut a bit short when my mentor exiled himself. Warbler ignored this. Hood says Isabet turned coat. Cost you the seat. It's fetching, Jackal said through clenched teeth. And Jackal, not Isabet, not Jacko, fetching and Jackal, our hoof names. We fucking earned them. Warbler gave a solid nod of agreement. You're right. The old mongrel's gaze drifted up, and his chin lifted. The bonds around Jackal's wrists parted. Another swift slice from Hoodwink freed his ankles. Jackal got to his feet, and Warbler followed him up. Hood came around to stand between them, sheathing his knife. The Tyrkanian had a forked tongue from the beginning, Jackal, Warbler said. He was just ferreting out the Claymaster's biggest rival. Tell him. Hoodwink turned his unblinking stare on Jackal. It was the wizard's idea. Send me out with the elf. Told the Claymaster it would provoke your challenge.
And what were you supposed to do with her? Jackal asked.
Rape her and throw her off the top of Badayat, Hoodwink said woodenly. Make it look the work of orcs. Jackal bristled.
That what you did when you took her from Dogfall? Made it look like the work of orcs?
Wasn't me, Hood replied. Wasn't the Claymaster. You had that wrong.
Jackal's mouth was dry, foul-tasting with bitter truths.
Hell's damn it all. Fetch was right. She hadn't done this to him. It was all his own fool-ass doing. The Claymaster's biggest rival? Jackal had never been close. Not near as close to a rival as he'd been to his own ambitions. All the old man had to do was wait him out, watch as he ground himself to dust beneath the heels of his headlong flight to leadership. He'd thought it was his last chance, and been warned it was the wrong one to take. He could have done it differently at any one of 100 moments. He could have done it all differently. And what if Crafty had it wrong? Jackal demanded of Hoodwink. What if I had let you leave with her?
Warbler stepped in. He would have brought her to me. As you saw, we did her no ill.
No ill? Jackal snapped. She's still dead now, Warbler.
A clean death and an honorable one to her mind, boy. It's what you should have done when you found her.
Sliding the kerchief off his head, Jackal scrubbed at his hair, pacing away from the other two.
Strava. He was taking her to Strava, a place to be safe, a place to live. And now she was out there in the dark, preparing her own end, or already dead, limp and cooling in the moonlight. Come morning, only the carrion birds would know where she lay. In a month, she would be nothing but another fetish of bleached bones, adorning ancient, remorseless Uwandulas.
And why would he bring her to you? Jackal demanded, whirling and gesturing wildly between Warbler and Hoodwink.
What is this?
I've been a free rider for nearly 15 years, Warbler told him. But Hood's been out here most of his life. I asked him to join the bastards, get close to the Claymaster, be my eyes and ears. It took me a long time to find someone I trusted enough with the task.
Jackal shot a look at Hoodwink. And why would you do this for him?
There was no response.
I never left, Jackal, Warbler went on. Not in my heart. They marred my bastard tattoos, but the hoof lies deeper than flesh. The Claymaster has ruled too long. These last few months, Hood's been telling me it looked like you would take the seat. I just learned you failed. Claymaster must have thought you had a chance and took steps to bring you down.
Jackal chewed on this for a moment. You think he knew Crafty all along? Arranged to have him come to the kiln?
I don't know, Warbler admitted.
No, Jackal said, his mind working quickly. That fat fuck has his own designs.
He may have betrayed me, but he was no puppet of the Claymaster. It's the other way around.
Yes, Hoodwink agreed.
Jackal took a deep breath, steeling himself for the answer to his next question. And Fetch? How long has she been healing to the chief's commands? Hood's grave mask did not slip.
Never saw them speak. Not until after the vote. She volunteered to act as champion. Chief knew you were going to choose Oates. She claims to be the only one who could beat him. Claymaster wasn't hearing it. Then he talked to the wizard in private. After that, he said she could fight. No one foresaw her axe hitting that table.
It was true. Stunned as he was, Jackal still recalled the chief's face, equally slack-jawed.
She made her choice, Warbler growled. Now it's time you made yours.
And what is that?
Whether or not you want to continue trying to save the Gray Bastards.
A disgusted noise escaped from Jackal's lips.
From what? The Claymaster? We are both testaments to where that leads, Warbler. If you had just been patient, if I had just been patient, one of us might have succeeded him. He's going to be dead in a few years.
Warbler's thin smile bordered on mocking.
You believe so?
What do you know that I don't? Jackal said.
A hog-steaming heap, Warbler barked. But there's much you can teach me, too, especially concerning the Swaddlehead Sorcerer. Leaving the Claymaster with a wizard is woe on the wind, Jackal, no matter which is holding the reins. Help me break that oozing old shit's twisted back and take your revenge on the Tyrkanian.
It was Jackal's turn to display a mocking smile. So you trust me now?
Not much, Warbler said. But I don't know you anymore, boy. Seems to me you've made some fool-ass choices.
So have I, though.
Hood's vouched for you. Says you've been dead set on booting the Claymaster. That gives us enough common ground to start, far as I can spit.
Jackal eyeballed Hoodwink and sneered. Vouched for me, but didn't vote for me?
Why is that, Hood? If you had sent your axe into the stump, the three of us wouldn't be standing here conspiring in the dust.
Hoodwink didn't seem likely to answer, so Warbler did.
He had no choice. In the Hoof's eyes, Hood has to be dog-loyal to the Claymaster until the very end.
Had he thrown in with me, it would have been the end, Jackal replied bitterly.
Hood only turned away, unconcerned, and walked to where the hogs were tethered.
You don't trust him, Warbler said, and that's good. You weren't supposed to. But give me 8 days, and I wager you'll begin to trust me. If you don't, well, hells, you're a free rider now, and can go where you wish.
Hoodwink returned before Jackal could answer, bearing a thrum. Jackal's thrum.
They'll never believe I didn't catch up to him, Hoodwink told Warbler, as he handed him the weapon along with a single bolt.
Jackal tensed as the old mongrel loaded the stock bow.
Could do the hog instead, Warbler offered.
The look that Hoodwink gave him could have withered crops. Warbler chuckled darkly. Watching them, Jackal was suddenly reminded of the way he and Oates jested. Until Warbler stepped back a pace and loosed the bolt into Hoodwink's thigh. He shot from the hip, yet the aim was unerring, piercing the meat while missing the bone. Hood's knee buckled slightly, but he remained upright, balancing on his uninjured leg. His breath came out in rapid, noisy pulses from his nostrils, but he did not so much as grunt against the pain.
Fucking hells.
Jackal managed not to say it aloud.
Well aimed, kid, Warbler proclaimed, tossing Jackal his empty stock bow. Bring Hood his hog. Least you could do after feathering him like that.
Jackal did as ordered, slinging his stock bow across his back as he went. He gave Harth a rub on the flank as he retrieved Hood's barbarian, a lean beast the color of old ash that had no name Jackal had ever heard. Hoodwink ignored all attempts by Warbler to help him mount and swung his skewered leg over the saddle.
"You know what to tell them?" Warbler asked.
Hoodwink nodded.
"Luck then, brother. Live in the saddle."
Without responding, Hood clicked his tongue and rode off.
"Die on the hog," Jackal said, unable to let the creed remain unfinished.
He didn't say it.
"He never does," Warbler muttered, still watching the swiftly dwindling shadow.
After a moment, he ambled over to the hogs and began tightening the cinch strap on his barbarian, clearly intending to ride. Jackal joined him and started adjusting Harth's tack. He still hadn't decided what to do, but any choice made would involve his ass grinding leather. After a long silence, he looked over Harth's back at Warbler's hog.
"When did you lose Border Lord?"
"First summer after leaving the kiln," Warbler replied, still intent on his task. "Brushfoot."
Jackal nodded sympathetically, even though Warbler was not looking at him.
"And this one?" Jackal asked.
"I call him Mean Old Man," Warbler replied, giving the near-pitch-black pig a final look over.
"This is Harth," Jackal said, then realized he had not been asked.
Hells, his own voice sounded 10 years younger, whining for approval. At that moment, he almost mounted up, put heel to hog, and rode off. His old life was through. Why go wading deeper into the past with an old outcast who made him feel a child? The answer was enthroned within his skull. This old outcast made Jackal who he was, made Fetch and Oats, too. When they were younger, they all thought they would one day ride under his command, and spent long afternoons entertaining one another with certainties of that glorious future life. Warbler would be their chief, and they his most trusted riders. They had not been able to fathom his sudden, grievous ousting. To this day, there was still much Jackal did not know about Warbler's failed challenge. And he wanted to. He wanted to finally know this champion of his boyhood.
"What is Hood going to tell the Claymaster?" Jackal asked. "That I'm dead?"
Warbler chuffed. "That you're alive. That you escaped. The truth is the only choice. Sooner or later, you are going to meet other nomads, and word will spread, free rider to free rider. Eventually, it will get back to the kiln. Hoodwink gets caught in that deep a lie, the Claymaster will sniff him out. Besides, knowing you're out here somewhere will make him sweat."
"Good enough," Jackal said.
"Tell me, what will happen in 8 days that you believe will make me want to help you?"
"A ride north," Warbler replied, climbing into the saddle.
An 8-day northward ride, Jackal calculated, would bring us to... He looked up sharply. Warbler gave a quick, confirming nod.
"His Sparta."
With that, the old thrice turned his hog, glanced at the stars for a bearing, and began riding. Jackal lingered a moment to face a different direction, one guided only by a set of barely perceptible footprints in the dust. They disappeared into a still landscape, rendered nearly featureless by night. Farewell, starling.
Chapter 22. The bones of Kalbarka sprawled upon the banks of the river. Beneath the sunrise, the crumbling buildings composed a carcass, a decrepit pilgrim dead of thirst within reach of water. The long arches of the old imperial bridge jutted from the ruins and spanned the muddy shallows of the Guadalquivir, seeming to flee the decay of the once great city. The bridge was an ancient construction, yet stood sound while the surrounding buildings of Hispartan architects slowly fell to rubble, shaming the genius of their imperial forebears. 3 hard days in the saddle were needed to reach this place.
At first, Jackal had been perplexed by the westward lean of their course, but now he understood. Kalbarka resided above the heart of Ulwandulas, backed to the north and west by the mountain range known as the Smelted Mounts, and though it had never recovered from its razing by orcs during the incursion, the ruined city still remained an embarkation point for the Emperor's Road. Another invention of the now extinct Imperium, the cobbled marvel was not one road, but several that cut through the Lotlands, maintaining courses once paramount to trade and the swift movement of legions. Jackal did not know what happened to the emperors, only that there was a first and a last, and much had changed since their days. The Hisparthan kings had risen after them, but they too lost their hold on Ulwandulas. The sparsely populated badlands that Jackal called home had little use for roads and mile markers. The mongrel hoofs avoided them, preferring to ride cross-country among the scrub and the boulders. That is where any encroaching thicks would be, not marching down some neatly paved avenue. However, the road was the swiftest route into Hisparta.
"We will rest the hogs here," Warbler declared, gazing down at Kalbarka from their vantage upon a ridge. "Once the sun is high, we will take the emperors, choose some distance before nightfall."
They proceeded down into the valley and reached the river while the morning was still young. The ruins rested in crown lands, though Jackal saw no evidence of soldiery as they crossed the bridge and approached what was left of the walls. He knew from talks with Ignacio's men that patrols here were few. The gray bastards rarely had cause to intrude this far, and Jackal had only ridden within sight of Kalbarka once before. Warbler clearly knew his way around. He guided them through the rubble-strewn alleys, past the shadowed sockets of doorways and windows long bereft of habitation. The orcs had occupied the city for years after breaking the defenses, and smears of their savage calligraphy stained the whitewash, boasts written in blood to their Assyrian gods. Fix had no talent for building. Haphazard heaps of stone and timber were thrown into the breaches they made in the walls, all that was done to shore up their prize against a counterattack. Not that it mattered. Hisparta never attempted to retake the city. It was abandoned by the enemy only when the great plague swept through Ulwandulas, killing orcs and men in reaping strokes, ending the war.
"The Frails never have come back," Jackal commented, craning his neck around to look at the puzzle of broken dwellings. "Must have been too ashamed." Ahead of him, Warbler huffed. "They'll be back. Soon as some king orders the reclamation of the lots, this warren will be crawling with more soldiers than rats." Jackal was dubious, but he kept his mouth closed. "For now," Warbler went on, "it's a good place for free riders. Plenty of places to hole up, rest, hide if you need to. Just keep away from the old mausoleum and any tunnels leading beneath ground. The halflings have a permanent colony here, digging around for every shit Bellico ever took. They think you've despoiled their work. You won't make it out of Kalbarka alive." Jackal did not care for Warbler's instructional tone. This wasn't his first ride.
"I can handle halflings. Me and their high priest have an understanding."
Warbler twisted in the saddle and squinted at Jackal for a moment. He said nothing, and soon turned back around.
They rode into what was left of a plaza and dismounted, quickly unsaddling their barbarians and stowing the tack within a nearby building.
"We'll walk the hogs down to a spot I know where they can drink, then come back and get some rest."
They slept the morning away in the cool shadows of the ruins. Jackal gave himself to slumber readily, but fell into fitful dreams of starling. He awoke sore and sickened, with hours to spare before noon. Needing to feel the sun on his skin, he went out to the plaza and sat upon a cracked plinth. He busied himself with the care of his weapons, first cleaning his blades, before moving on to the longer task of his stock bow. As he was refitting the bowstring to the prods, Warbler emerged.
"Best begin practice with a bow," the old thrice proclaimed. "That thrum won't last a year in this life."
"That why you use that piece of unyard driftwood?" Jackal asked. "Couldn't maintain your stock bow?"
Warbler just laughed and shook his head, ducking back into the building to retrieve his saddle. Jackal knew the old thrice wasn't wrong, but the constant advice was tickling at his temper. Every word out of Warbler's mouth, hell's, his very presence, was a reminder that this life was permanent. Try as he might, Jackal could not shake the feeling that he was simply on another patrol, an extended ranging into unfamiliar territory, and when it was done, he would ride back to the kiln. But that fantasy only lived upon the surface of his mind. Pursuing it only dredged up pain, as the truth of the past days poisoned the intimacy of years. They left Kalbarka before noon, taking the ancient road. The straight, flat line of pale stones speared hypnotically toward the smelteds, the foothills limned in shimmers of heat. Warbler set an even, tedious pace. Mean old man seemed well accustomed, but Hearth had difficulties. He wanted to run, and, when held back, kept slowing to a plod. Jackal focused on getting control, and was soon riding alongside his fellow nomad. They stopped rarely, and spoke not at all. The Emperor's road led them northeast for most of the day, skirting the mountains. Finally, in the late afternoon, it split, the main body striking directly northward, while the smaller offshoot turned toward the descending sun. Warbler pulled his hog east, showing his ass to the smelted mounts. Dusk came, holding court over the sky with beautiful brevity, before yielding gracefully to night. Still they rode on, and Jackal enjoyed the swiftly cooling air until Warbler called a halt. He led them off the road to a stand of stone pine, and declared they would camp. The rations in Jackal's kit would not last the ride unless stretched, so he took only pulls from his water skin as he lay upon his bedroll, reclined against the saddle. He was drifting off to sleep when a rattling weight struck him in the chest. Plucking the flung sack from his chest, he unknotted the string. "Almonds," he said, glancing up to look at the sack's thrower sitting beneath the opposite tree. But Warbler's scarred arms were crossed over his chest, and his eyes were already closed. They were in the saddle by dawn, and rode hard before the heat was high. Warbler called a halt early, veering off the road to a grove of lemon trees. They stayed only long enough to pick some choice pieces and continued on, eating the fruit as they rode and saving the rinds for their hogs. The countryside grew noticeably lusher as they again turned north, though the dusty, sun-bleached rocks still far outnumbered the greenery. Jackal was not certain exactly when it happened, but by midday he was unmistakably aware they were now in lands he had never before traveled. He wanted to ask why they were bound for Hisparta, but kept his questions locked behind his teeth. The road was far from abandoned, and they began to cross paths with other travelers, overtaking a lone halfling pilgrim on foot, and, later, meeting a trio of mongrel freeriders coming south. Warbler stopped and spoke to them all. The discussions were brief, almost ritual. "Where have you come from? Where are you bound? What have you seen upon the road?" Answers to these questions were exchanged with no pleasantries, nor any guile. Warbler always responded truthfully, and Jackal detected no dissembling from those they encountered. The information was sparse, yet valuable. Even no news was prized. An uneventful journey was often a safe one. With the halfling, names were not exchanged, but Warbler made a point of introducing Jackal to the half-orc nomads. Each of the three accepted his name with a terse nod, their dust-caked faces displaying a restrained mix of grief and scorn, as if they mourned and detested his choice to join their ranks. Jackal found this same conflicted soup boiling in his own gut as he returned their stares. These were free riders, outcasts, thrown out of their hoofs for
for all manner of unspoken reasons. Jackal was all too aware that the causes for exile were not always